say that. People are going to think you're a complete douchebag, Dan, for saying things like that. People don't like being called douchebags.
No.
That's right. No. People get very sensitive about being called douchebags. And you know why? Because that's what comedy writers on the internet call people they don't like. I don't know if women can be douchebags. Can women be douchebags? I mean, certainly we can have, you know, exhibit behaviour that is a douchebag. Yeah. But do women often get called douchebags? I'm open to being called a douchebag if people just want to send me an email. Douchebag@impromafia.com. And
you know what I don't like?
Straight to me.
Tool. I don't like being called a tool.
Really?
Yeah, I hate it.
And sometimes you are a bit of a tool, so I can see why.
See, you're doing it now and I hate it. Yeah, see how I hate it?
I know. What do I not like being called? Talentless.
Impro Mafia presents And Time. The opinions expressed on And Time are not necessarily the opinions of Impro Mafia.
Welcome to And Time, a podcast for improvisers and aspiring improvisers. I'm Dan Beeston, Impro Mafia's second in command.
And that would make me Natalie, number one in command, I guess, although I don't like that term or phrase much. But hello, I'm Natalie. I play with Impro Mafia and do stuff for the committee.
So, what has been going on in the last week or chunk of Impro in Brisbane?
Well, I guess the last time there was a podcast was before our end of year 2009. Possibly?
Yes, indeed.
Or just after?
I think it was like the day before we did Impro Unwrapped.
Yes, that's right. So in our quote-unquote break, we did the Impro Mafia Impro Unwrapped show. We did a New Year's show and we've done Prognosis Death. And next week we're back into the Speakeasy in Albion. So I don't know where my Christmas went, but it's around here somewhere. We'll find it. Yes, it's been quite a busy holiday period for Impro Mafia.
You think it's probably more important that we have a break from things that we hate rather than things that we love, I guess.
Well, that's true. Although, you know, too much familiarity can breed contempt.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I'm saying anything there. No, I'm kidding. But yes, I'm certainly glad to be on my work holidays now, which is I'm speaking to you from holiday land. And it's very nice to have those holidays off because working and doing shows, because I also did Falafel as well in early January. So working and doing shows and organising and all that sort of thing is a lot of work. So it's nice to have a bit of a break from one aspect of my life. So we had the Impro Unwrapped show.
Yep.
That was 13th of December. That was our final year show at the Brisbane Arts Theatre.
And that was our first short form show at the Arts Theatre last year. And only.
And only. And to my mind, it really helped to convince me that I think the Arts Theatre is our long form venue of choice. There were good moments in the show, but overall I felt the quality wasn't quite up to scratch of our long forms of the year. And it is very difficult to make the comparison, and they're two different beasts.
But those long forms have been going gangbusters all year.
Well, that's right, and maybe perhaps our success has been more than what we should have expected or should have hoped for with our long forms. So perhaps
or more than we deserve, possibly.
Yeah, more than we deserved, and possibly we're comparing unfavourably. But I certainly feel my experiences of short form at the Arts Theatre is that it's never quite reached those great heights
At Albion. Short form at Albion's been going gangbusters, hasn't it?
It has.
Up and down a little bit, but mostly up.
Yeah, it has. And it very much depends on the individual whom you ask as to whether they think it's been going well or not. because some people have great times at the Albion and really, really enjoy it. Others don't so much and find it a difficult venue to get into. Mm. In my case, I found it very difficult when we first started at the Albion. I just felt I wasn't clicking with it. And then I was fortunate to have about three or four shows in a row where I really had a good time. And a couple of those shows were quite outstanding and really, really great, fun, quality short form. And so that's made me a lot more favourable to the venue. But I think that players need to have that experience of really clicking with it and enjoying it before they fully embrace it, whereas it's a lot easier, I think, with the long forms to just click in and embrace it and love it straight away.
Now, I think that short form can work at the Arts Theatre, and indeed it has in the past, but I think that the short form that we're used to playing is a different type of short form to the short form that would work really effectively in a theatre venue.
Yes, I think scene work is probably more what we want to achieve at the Arts Theatre if we're talking about shorter games and not games, if you know what I mean. When we did The Wake at the start of 2009, we did an Armando first half, which was all scene work based on stories. And those sorts of things, I think, work really well. I think a lot of hoop games and game structures just don't gel with the audience. And they don't gel with the kind of people who are used to coming to the Arts Theatre as well.
Mm.
A number of people said to us on the New Year's show, which again was more short form, but slightly more thematic in that it was a year in review type show. But a couple of people were asking us, oh, do you need us to put round bits of paper for people to write suggestions on because they were used to us doing shows like Prognosis Death and Amy Holmes and the musical show where people do give ideas on pieces of paper. So I think the culture at the Arts Theatre is now used to long form. And I would be loath to really change that when we have great short form venues elsewhere.
Yes, yes. Until people start getting bored of the long form at the Brisbane Arts Theatre and we need to start mixing it up again, I don't think we need to change it.
Look, later in this podcast, we'll be going through the list of long form shows that are coming up at the Arts Theatre in 2010. So I hope that after people hear that, they won't grow bored.
No.
And in fact, they'll be excited about the long form shows that we have coming up.
That's our job today.
Yes. So, but thank you for preempting my announcement with, you know, hey, well, when people get bored... I'd like to think that they're not going to get bored, that they're going to be very excited every month at a new Impro Mafia long-form offering.
You think what you want. You're naive. Naive.
But that's the thing. We wrapped up our speakeasy. I think we mentioned that in the last podcast, which was very successful. That's coming back in a week's time. Monday the 1st of February is our first speakeasy show back. So get ready for that. It's going to be lots of fun this year. Mm-hmm. Probably it will run fairly much as it did last year to begin with for the first couple of months, and then possibly around mid-year we might look at doing some different format changes and different ideas, and that's solely because I have another commitment before then, which is the play Tasmanian Babes Fiasco, so I will miss some of the speakeasy, and I really want to give other people opportunities to MC in that time period so people can bring their performance skills sort of up and keep going, and people can work on their MC skills. And then once plays are over and things have died down a bit, then we can maybe look at working with people at developing some format ideas and things like that. So that's kind of the plan for the speakeasy as I have it at the moment. Of course, these things are all in flux, and if people have suggestions, they're more than welcome to get in contact with me. Natalie@impromafia.com.
Yeah. So did you enjoy the New Year's show?
I really did. I emceed the New Year's show and did, as we did last year, a year in review. We did a nice presentation, PowerPoint presentation with sort of things that had happened during the year, and then we improvised around it. There were some great games. I think the highlight was probably a cooking show that we did, a game based on MasterChef. And this was actually...
so glad not to be involved in that when I saw the mess that was involved and the amount of salt people consumed.
Well, it was actually Greg's idea in the when I was working on it. And he said, oh, we should do... because I said, oh, I need to do something based on MasterChef and Anna Bligh going on MasterChef. And he was like, well, let's do a cooking show. And I was like, oh, that could be difficult. Oh, no, it's all right. We'll bring, you know, we'll get some stuff in. We'll get some flour and... and so we brought up flour, soy sauce, blue food colouring, sugar or salt, and a bunch of just items from the pantry, which really shouldn't be put together in any kind of cooking form. And we got this great bloke whose name was Spiro out of the audience, and he volunteered. Al was the chef, and this audience member played his arm, so expert double figure style. And so he used his arms to mix all the ingredients, and Al kind of talked through what he was doing. Greg played the host, and Liam was his arms. And so, of course, Greg was tasting all of this disgusting concoctions that was being created. And, of course, stuff got all over the stage. But the scene went for a good amount of time. Like, it was at least a sort of an 8-minute scene, something like that.
It's a testament to the people that we work with that you can take something that is basically a simple year 7 camp game.
Yeah.
And keep it running for 8 minutes and still have the audience like bent over in laughter.
Well, this was the thing. I was sitting there thinking, oh, should I bring this down? But the audience was enjoying it so much. You know, when you get that feeling of just gut laughter coming off an audience, that they were like this, they don't want it to stop. They don't want it to stop. And I think that's why it was able to successfully run for so long. So that was certainly a highlight. Yourself and Amy did some lovely duets. The singing was quite pretty, quite beautiful. And I'm trying to remember what else happened on the New Year's show.
Oh, there was a spit take.
Oh, yes, there was. Yes, no, I remember that. That was a big climactic finale. So, I mean, New Year shows like that, you get a lot of people who aren't regular improvising audiences. So things like that, big fun.
I can't believe we
games.
Just sat there and went, oh, too many hoop games in that other show. That was the problem. And then we got, oh, but the good ones in the New Year show, they were the hoop games.
Look, I understand the gross hypocrisy that I'm speaking here. I'm the first to put my hand up, but... I guess the audience...
We had some lovely scene games between them, though. I mean, that contrast actually helped.
Yeah, we did. And we had a lot of things that were inspired by news of the day. So, you know, here's a picture of an aeroplane. I'd like to see a scene inspired by an aeroplane or something like that. So it was more using the events through the year as jumping points. I think the difference probably between our New Year's show and our Impro Unwrapped show is we probably had more of an audience used to the long forms at our Impro Unwrapped show, whereas that New Year's audience is a particular beast.
Yeah.
There are a lot of theatre members, a lot of people who come for New Year's specifically because it's at the Arts Theatre. They don't actually look at the show. They just book for their New Year's at the Arts Theatre. So you really need to make it a a bit more accessible. And and then maybe having that thematic sort of year in review thing did help ease that audience into it.
You sort of brought it into that sort of Good News Week style game show.
I guess so.
Sort of
bent. It was a fun old time because I know I had to work New Year's Eve and New Year's Day at 4 a.m.
God.
So that was a lot of fun the next day. But then on New Year's Day, I went to sleep at 4 o'clock in the afternoon and woke up at 3:30 Saturday morning. So I slept for like 12 hours.
Nice.
Almost 12 hours.
I pulled an all nighter once. One New Year's Eve. I worked from 7 until 7 New Year's Eve.
Right.
Went out, partied all night. Came home, changed my shirt. Did another 12-hour shift, 7 till 7.
Wow.
Got home, decided that I was still keen. Gave Wade a call. He wasn't home. Then started to have blackouts. And then decided maybe I would go to bed. Slept for 14 hours.
Nice.
And then spent 3 days waiting for my adrenaline gland to refill.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I'm reasonably used to the starts. And I knew that you've just got to keep your mind on the fact that there is an opportunity to sleep coming. So you just have to push through and get to that sleeping opportunity. So, yeah, it wasn't like, I don't mean to sound like I'm complaining, but I guess sometimes when you look back on these things and you go, yeah, maybe that was a bit foolish, but you just do what you have to do. You know, we had a show.
Oh, I'm very pleased someone to have left. Tried it once.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I wouldn't be signing up to do that every week, for sure.
So we, at the moment, up to our elbows in prognosis death.
We certainly are.
Season 3.
We certainly are. And a lot of fun it is too. Although I have to say, just to be very selfish off the top of my head, I feel like I haven't been doing my character the service or the paying her the proper duties that she deserves.
I think there's a lot of that going around. I think people have very high opinions of what they want to be able to do. And on a night where your character isn't shining, you feel that you personally are not stepping up to the mark.
Well, this is the interesting thing, because it was actually on our third night, where ostensibly my character was more of a background character,
mm-hmm.
that I felt most in tune.
Oh, okay.
It is actually the reverse for me. It was when I was sort of more in front that I felt like I wasn't really delivering as much as I could have been. And look, I don't mean to take away from anyone who's listening who may have seen, because I don't think I was completely crap. That's not what I'm saying. But I really, really enjoyed night 3 because I think I was able to just connect in a little better. Having said that, I, again, was working 4 a.m. starts for the first two shows. So I think that that probably the tiredness did impact, and having Saturday to sleep and rest and really gear up for the show then tuned in a better performance. So I'm really pleased to be on holidays this week for the final 3 shows, because I'm pretty confident that I'm going to deliver.
And you don't have a lot of other thing pressing engagements. You're not rehearsing for another show. I mean, you're doing some writing or some...
I have a play read through on Saturday afternoon, and I've got to clean the house on Friday, but, you know, there's nothing.
Yeah.
I'm not, you know, doing brain surgery.
You're not burning the candle. You're only burning the candle at one end this time round.
That's right. Yes.
Which will be nice.
It's a holiday from work, not a holiday from life. So, yeah. But, no, I'm really enjoying it. How are you finding the show?
I was having a little bit of trouble on the first and second night as well. But I was happy being out there. But I tend to find myself backstage a lot of the time watching everyone else perform. So I quite enjoyed the third night because I got to have a couple of scenes that I really enjoyed and that I really felt progressed my character. I was so worried about keeping my character static. Ludwig Lestrange has these things that define him, and I've been doing them for 14 shows now, where I'm sort of defined by my attitudes towards people. And I suddenly realized that I didn't need to be static anymore, and that the character needed to make some changes, and that change is good in a show like this. So things will never be the same.
That's true. They will never be the same. There was a big mid-season finale on Saturday night. I suppose we can probably... It is out there. Reverend Jeremy Thistlethwaite died.
Oh,
for real.
It's beautiful.
As opposed to just being, you know...
Dying 7 times
in an
evening.
Yeah, that's right. In an evening and then turning up again. He actually had a beautiful moving death scene where he sacrificed himself to plug a hole in a portal, and he put himself into a Hercule Poirot book knowing that he would die in the book. And he, so therefore he died. But he did it to save the rest of the hospital staff. And it was very moving. And I think everyone was really... The overwhelming feeling that or emotion that I've heard since then is, we didn't want Reverend Thistlethwaite to die. He can't die. He's got to come back. I wanted to see more of him. So it just shows, and it's a credit to Wade of how well he plays that character, that people just adore it so much. And we're very sad to lose that character. But, you know, Wade's a great improviser, and he'll have more characters to come.
I'm sure by the time this podcast podcast goes out, everyone will have fallen in love with his creation of his.
Absolutely. And we saw one of his last week, and I can't remember his name, but the German psychiatrist von Lichtenspiel, I think.
Helmut von Lichtenspiel.
So he was quite good. So I'm not sure if he's making a return, but we'll find out this week.
Yes, indeed. Oh, I'm excited and then trepidatious too. We haven't yet broken the curse.
What curse?
The fourth night curse.
Oh, God, don't talk about that.
There's always going to be the worst show of a run.
Yes, well... Yes,
and quite frankly, compared to like anything else, our worst show is brilliant.
Well, compared to other things, yes. I mean, not compared to winning the lotto and going on a date with Brad Pitt, maybe not, but...
That beardy?
Well, he's split from Angelina Jolie, apparently.
Because of the beard.
Oh, right.
He's got like this weird hobo beard going on.
Well, you know, he's going anti-Hollywood, Dan. You can't fault a man for that. He's entitled.
I've been going anti-Hollywood for years. Never looked twice at me.
You kind of have to be Hollywood first to go anti-Hollywood. Sitting in your flat going, that's it, I'm anti-Hollywood. And I'm quite the same. Yeah, but that's just me. I mean, you rage against the machine, my friend.
Oh, I'll rage.
Yeah, you rage.
We've got new bits and pieces for Prognosis Death too. We've got brains and eyeballs and stuff.
We do. And also, we haven't yet seen the voice of God, as we like to call him, Master Robotham, make an appearance yet. And he traditionally makes an appearance at least one night as a character in Prognosis Death. And we haven't seen that yet. So I look forward to seeing what he might be pulling out in one of the final three shows.
Yes.
So he always adds yes. a...
Well, who's been our guest stars so far? We had myself.
Yeah, Lestrange, and then Thistlewaite. Coincidentally, on the night when Thistlewaite became, like, just disappeared and Wade played the French cannibal opening the restaurant, and then Melody Carmichael. Yep. So we still have Dean, we still have, well, one would assume maybe Rick Cook City might be making a comeback, and then we have a spare night. So I don't know,
actually, because Mike... I mean, Mike plays all these... I mean, I guess he probably... I don't know whether he wants to play Cocksteady again.
Oh, hang on. Dan's winking at me. Did I give
it
away?
I'm just going to cut the fucking thing.
Okay. But won't this come out after
It'll probably come out after
yeah,
it anyway.
So there you go. So by the time
Mike
you hear
had
this,
a great time playing
Mike
Cocksteady.
Mike played Cocksteady. The audience went gaga ate shit as they normally do.
Yeah.
And it was fun.
So, Prognosis Death.
Awesome fun.
You should have seen it.
Lots of fun.
If you didn't.
I think night one, I think the great achievement this far of Prognosis Death, we had a fantastic opening night. It was really, really, we had the two Burton Mangolds.
Mm-hmm.
We had Anthony Massingham step up as the other Burton Mangold. And to his credit, he hung around backstage and, you know, jumped out when he was needed. It was really, really run down. He got covered in slime. He got his, what would you call it? Baptism of green slime. He got completely squirted in
and
slime.
He's never done any impro training in his life, has he?
I don't believe so, no. And yet maybe at school, because I know that's where Dave started improv at school.
He's up on stage, looking completely comfortable. People will drag him out there, and then he starts having one-liners and stuff.
Yeah, well, he and Dave had a great little chat when Nurse Buble was trying to pick between the two of them, but saying, you know, they're identical, and they're wearing the identical shoes, and how will we tell the difference?
And one's
handsomer than the other. One's slightly handsomer than the other. And then Dave and Anthony start having a chat about how they both think each other's quite handsome. It was really, really sweet. Except my mind at the time was preoccupied by the fact that I had promised to Dave, right, because Dave had asked for the physical characteristic that Mangold had, which turned out to be a third nipple. And I had said to Dave, oh, look, I won't draw it on you now at halftime because it'll melt off with sweat and blood and stuff. So I'll draw it on you before the scene happens. Of course, what happens is we move straight into it.
Yep.
I haven't drawn it on Dave.
No.
I'm singing, you got to have a third nipple. And then I realized, crap, I haven't drawn it on his chest. And I went, is he going to realize this? What's he going to do? And
I have
genius that he is, goes, look, here it is, pulls up his shirt, there's nothing on his chest, but then goes, look, it's here on my ass, and pulls down the side of his pants to show me his hip. And I'm like, yes, there's the third nipple on his ass. So there you go, that's called improvising. And I still had the like eyeliner pen in my pocket, in my nurse's uniform pocket, to draw on the blasted thing, but I had forgotten.
I am often accused by Simon Feeney of telegraphing the rhymes that I'm about to do when I'm singing songs Nobody's Business, but I have never seen anyone telegraph as effectively as you when you went to rhyme tipple with nipple.
Well, I don't know what else you could rhyme with nipple and not give it away.
Yeah, that's exactly it. There's nothing.
Ripple? It could have caused this, whatever I choose could cause a ripple. That actually would have been better. But yeah, no, I just went, what rhymes? Tipple. Oh, yeah, I haven't had a drink or a tipple, but I know that Mangold has a third nipple. Look, I'm not the world's best singer. I understand and appreciate that, but it was one of those, hey, get to plot point. Ripple,
oh,
stripple.
I never said cripple? You shouldn't have done
cripple?
It.
I should have gone with cripple. my heart will be forever crippled if I don't find Mangold's third nipple.
We should travel back in time.
We should travel back in time, make me do a better song with better rhymes. And yes, we'll all be happy. So yeah, Prognosis Death, lots of fun. Great first night, really, really good night. Good follow-up night, but third night really out of sight with Wade's.
Oh, knocked it down to the
park. Wade's death, Reverend Thistle Wade's death, and Wade's goodbye to that character. So yeah, really fun.
It's so nice to come home after that and see a bunch of things on Twitter going, is the Reverend really dead? Yes, he is.
Yes, it's interesting, the Twitter phenomenon, because you sort of look for people to see what they're saying. Same with Facebook and status updates.
You
and
get
sort of,
immediate feedback.
Yeah, and when you don't get that feedback, you sort of go, well, I do anyway. It was like, oh, nobody mentioned the show. Or
Yeah. You're like,
nobody mentioned my character. I thought maybe someone would have liked that thing that I did where I bent over.
I don't suppose anyone's reviewed it.
Shoved my ass in the air. I thought somebody would have mentioned that, but nobody has. And but that's fine. I'll just have to try harder next time and shove my ass around a bit more, or maybe actually look at doing something that's character or story based, as opposed to just blatant slapstick physical boob humour. Yep.
Let it out.
Yep. No, it's all fine. Yep.
It'll be okay.
Shouldn't rely on my boobs. People have gotten used to that.
That's the way.
Yeah, get it all out. No, but it is. I'm so pleased. It's always one of those things of I'm just so pleased when people like something that you do.
Yes, in a way that you can cut and paste and store in a file and print out and tattoo on your ass.
It's so meaningful. No. Oh, it's just, it's the modern world. It's just a bit of nice feedback.
140 characters worth of love.
If people would like to email me personally, natalie@impromafia.com, they can do that. And please don't refrain from being glowing.
That's Impro Mafia business only.
That's right.
Shouldn't be using that account for self-indulgence.
Okay, sure.
We should get on to our topic.
Yes, which is the season.
The season.
People have had to sit through half an hour of us babbling. Hopefully they've fast-forwarded to this bit. Hello, people who've just fast-forwarded to this bit. You missed a stunning, stunning intellectual discussion about Jean-Paul Sartre, the nature of ennui, and
some boob
shit. yes. So, this is the 2010 season, which is my first season as artistic director.
So, these are all the shows that are going to be occurring at the Brisbane Arts Theatre this year.
That is right. We have Albion back,
yep.
Directed by Al Crawford.
Yep.
We have The Speakeasy back, which is our show for everybody.
Yes.
New players as well as older players. But they will run every week. They're sort of fairly set in their format.
Yes.
The Brisbane Arts Theatre is our showcase venue for long form.
Mm-hmm.
Or our venue where we showcase long form, however you would choose to put that. So, we have shows going on this year. A mix of things. So, I better launch into it.
Have a crack. What's the first cab off the rank? And when
is
it?
Well, look, after Prognosis Death finishes, it obviously is our first cab off the rank. Yes. We will go in back into our format.
Right,
of
our seventh cab off the rank.
Yeah.
What is the seventh cab off the rank?
And that is, you should insert a drum roll here.
Ching. That's a rimshot.
Yeah. Rimshot. Oh, whatever. So, the first show is Sunday, the 7th of March, is Enid Blyton by the Book, and otherwise known as The Dog Show.
The Dog Show.
And this is my show. This is to be directed by me, and it's on at this time of the year, so I can have good access to the dog.
Yeah.
The dog is... The dog is named Oscar. He's a wonderful border collie who belongs to a friend of mine, and I've known him since he was a puppy.
So, just to confirm... You're bringing a live dog
a
to an
live
impro stage.
Dog.
A live, active,
purring,
canine.
Not purring, bark,
it's a,
not bark.
It's a
he
cat
doesn't
in
bark.
A suit.
It's a cat in a suit. No, he doesn't really bark. He's a really, really well-trained dog and is trainable. Border collies are very clever. The idea is I wanted to really create some mayhem on stage, and I think that adding in an animal that obviously has not had impro training, much less... Theatre training.
I don't know how good he's going to go in Word at a Time story.
Yeah, well, that's right.
Problem.
One day I woof and I had this idea actually after a discussion I had with Amy where we were talking about doing detectives and kids and solving mysteries and things like that. And I said I quite like Enid Blyton. And then I had the idea of having the actual dog. And then eventually I sort of joined the two up because I was just going to have a dog show. But then I thought it would be nice to be able to have... some degree of control over what the dog might do by setting the framework as a by the book. We obviously did Jane Austen by the book last year. That was quite successful. So being able to play Enid Blyton, and I will probably play her as so you know, as director slash narrator, enables me to the premise I think will be that Enid Blyton has a new dog.
Yes.
She loves her new dog, mm-hmm. and she's inspired to write stories or a story about her new dog being yep. one of the main characters. So taking heavily from Famous Five and Secret Seven and that sort of detective style genre of Enid Blyton, but you know, there's potential for other yeah. Enid Blyton's more of the magical stuff like Faraway Tree and Wishing Chair. Boarding school ones, the boarding school tales. So there's a lot of potential to mix all of those sort of well known Enid Blyton tropes, lots of kids having ginger snaps and pots of tea and honey and scones. And
the great thing with having a carnivore on stage too is that it's an excellent incentive for people to pay their membership so that they're covered by insurance.
Oscar, I can tell you, has never barely even harmed a fly. He naps at flies and doesn't actually get them. He is the most wonderful dog. And
he's also never been on an impro stage.
He hasn't. And what I wanted to do was really create that sense of chaos, because what is improvisation if not creating some sort of order out of chaos? And that's what I want to achieve. And I think
is he trained at all?
Yeah, of course.
So he'll sit?
Yeah, of course. So
we could get him to sit.
Yes, yes, yes. And the idea is that we will actually teach him some extra commands to do things like roll over, play dead, go up on his hind legs, walk that way. And it's all done through hand motions. That's how you train dogs.
Oh, yeah.
You all do, because it's all visual. So you can give them a verbal clue, but you can also give them a visual clue.
So he may actually listen more carefully than our fellow improvisers.
You know what? You're not wrong, Dan. He might actually take direction. I joke. But no, I just, and so I wanted to have that ability then as the author to be able to go, if something's getting out of hand, I can call Oscar to me, call a scene change, calm him down if he's getting upset. But look, that's very much unlikely. He is honestly, the whole reason that this show came to mind is because of that dog. It's not that I had the idea and then mm-hmm. found a dog.
Yep.
I know this dog so well.
Should we get some more dogs and some cats?
I would.
Maybe a bear.
Well, the thing is that Oscar's really friendly and he actually lives with a cat, so he's very cat friendly. He wouldn't attack cats.
What about bears?
Bears, I think he's starting to deal with like Russian circus mafia people to get bears on stage.
Yeah.
People look unkindly towards it. I've had a few people actually ask me what are the legalities of putting a dog on stage in terms of RSPCA and whatnot. Please trust me that I will make sure these are all checked out and governed. But the theatre dogs have been known to be in theatre productions before, of like Annie and things like that, where dogs are used. And the rules are just generally as long as they're fed, they're watered, they are taken for toilet breaks, and they're not, you know, unduly stressed. Yeah, they're not unduly stressed. And we're obviously doing a one-off show, half an hour each half. It's not as strenuous an experience as a full-on theatre show. So please, everyone, believe me that all of these will be looked into and examined and given the thumbs up. So
I'm hoping. I haven't.
Otherwise, it'll be Greg in a dog suit. So, you know, look, we've got a contingency.
You may not have selected a cast yet, but I'm hoping to fulfil my dream of being a part of Charlie the Wonder Dog.
Well, that's another inspiration. Look, that's another inspiration for it, that idea that no matter what happens in the show, the audience will laugh because you've got an actual dog there being a dog and the improvisers working around that. I thought it would be a really great stretch of the imagination and the improvisers' talents to actually, you know, they say never work with children or animals, and so let's give it a go in improv. If there's one place where an animal is suited to, it is improvisation, because mm-hmm. they can run off to a corner. Oh, look, Oscar's found a clue. You know, he can sit down and go, no, there's something here we have to investigate. there's so many possibilities to come out of what. And look, he's not going to be on all the time. You know, this is not just, you know, a
dog.
So
he's not the lead.
No, he's a character in the story.
He has a lead, he's not the lead.
There are still characters doing their stories and whatnot and having scenes, and then Oscar is just a part of that. So, yeah. That's show one, Sunday,
so
March 7.
What's number two then?
Show number two is directed by Alex Reichardt, and it is a format called Tall Tales, which is very interesting. The premise is that a group of people are on their way somewhere, their car breaks down, and they have to tell each other stories to keep themselves amused. So if you remember the famous story about how Mary Shelley came up with Frankenstein, it was during a storytelling competition with Lord Byron and Percy Shelley. It sounds very similar to me, but then maybe I'm just putting my own historical spin on it. But yeah, it's slightly more dramatic, you know.
I assume the stories will get played out.
Tales, yes, yes. So they'll tell the stories, and essentially there'll be like little directed scenes. So it is a long form, but there are the stories will, you know, take on a life of their own over the course of the show. So a really interesting format idea, and I look forward to Alex Reichardt taking the helm of that one. He did All Together Now last year, which worked a treat, so I look forward to seeing his work in this one. The third show is Sunday the 2nd of May, And this is our musical show, which Mike Griffin and Luke Grimmelswan will be directing. They had given me a name for it, but I believe they might be looking to change that, so I might not say any names now in case that does change and I end up looking silly. But yes, it's a musical show, and it's based around, they obviously did One Bride for Seven Brothers in November 2009, which went really well, got a lot of people interested in doing more musical shows, both performing and watching.
Yep.
So we'll be doing a big musical show, and this time they're looking more at the West Side Story type of genre. So
lots of snapping fingers.
Yeah, kind of maybe
60s. Dance fights.
Yeah, that's right. A little bit gangster. Little bit, but you know, like clean, like gangsters. So a little bit of that. So that'll be in very good hands there with those two. So we look forward to seeing that one. In June, Sunday the 6th of June, we turn to Mr. Dan Beeston for Untopia, which is a Orwellian sort of dystopian future and things like that. So that I don't know if you want to give us a quick rundown.
I always love Brazil and 12 Monkeys and 1984. Like that sort of dystopian future is something that really intrigues me. And so I really wanted to do that. The only trick is, though, that I've got to figure out how to do it as an impro show because generally those things are so intricately woven together that that's what makes it, or at least part of it is. Like 12 Monkeys has it has a story where it all sort of turns back on itself at the end and locks together like a really strong story. Whereas something like Brazil has a universe where half of the universe is very chaotic and disordered and strange and the other half is very regimented. So I'm working at it from a point of view of creating the regimented side of the universe and allowing the impro to set the chaotic, dreamlike experience.
Well, it's going to be very interesting anyway. And again, a change from, you know, a big fun musical to a darker, you know, more obviously great potential for comedy as well. I mean,
I'm looking for a kind of a dark comedy.
Yeah, people should keep in mind that everything we do is meant to be entertaining in a comedic way. I mean, that's where improv really shines. But it is really fun to play about with these genres and to allow darker elements of comedy to come through to balance the big bombastic shows that we do. So, and this was really important to me in the mix of shows that I've chosen to have those shades of light and dark, so that people every month are coming back for something different and they're not coming back a month in a row and getting the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, they're really getting a different offering. And it really stretches us as a company and our skills. It also educates us because the people who do these shows need to educate themselves about the genre.
Yep.
You know, for example, you had to learn a lot about Jane Austen.
Yes,
you
indeed.
Know,
I had to learn that I liked it.
Exactly. And for example, you know, obviously I'm not preempting anything here, but casting is yet to happen in any of these shows. But if I was, you know, chosen to do your Untopia show, I would need to really read up, and particularly things like Brazil and 12 Monkeys, which I've never seen. So
you've never seen Brazil?
No, I haven't. I also haven't seen The Shawshank Redemption for my friend Stu. If he's listening, sorry, dude, just haven't got around to it. He's even given me the copy. I still haven't watched it, so I'm sorry. I haven't watched a lot of these type of films, so I'm aware of Orwell and Huxley and that sort of genre, but in terms of those other things that you've said, I'll need to really read up on those. And that's one of the reasons why I, you know, pick these shows, because I'm interested in shows that will expand our ability as a company. As you know, I'm constantly on to people about looking at current events and things that are happening now for relevance, particularly for shows like Albie and the Speakeasy, where you put in topical references and, you know, you just automatically build laughter and affection with the audience. So this is the same type of thing. You know, let's build our collective knowledge of the musical genre, of the Enid Blyton children's books, of dystopian future novels. So, yeah, so I'm pretty excited about that.
It's so much work to put in to something that goes for an hour and a half and happens once, isn't it?
Yes,
I mean, we did three rehearsals for Jane Austen, I think.
We did.
And each one was at least 2 hours long. And then I went home and watched Sense and Sensibility and then spent some time practicing accents and getting the character. Like,
but what we ended up with was a really good quality show.
Yeah, and it was, well, yes, indeed. But each person in there did like 10 hours work. Or dedicate 10 hours of their life, minimum, to do what ostensibly became an hour and a half show, which is something, I mean, I guess you put lots more work into a scripted theatre piece, but at the same time, it plays over and over again. I guess
it's true, but then, you know, once you have that knowledge doesn't go away.
Indeed. So now I can play a Jane Austen cad in short form or in anything
else.
Yeah,
or you've got knowledge.
Mm. And in fact, we did that. We reused the skills that we learned in a corporate gig.
We did, well, a corporate gig in inverted commas. We were hired by a gentleman to provide a Jane Austen show for his wife's birthday. She loves Jane Austen, so we went out to South McLean, North McLean, somewhere in McLean-y, and did a four-person Jane Austen, which worked really, really well. It was not the strict by-the-book format, but we put on the costumes and we spoke in nice voices and we told that husband and wife their story as it would have been a Jane Austen novel, and she loved it and we got great feedback for it. So this is the thing. These skills don't then just go away. So we can reuse
faster,
these things.
More powerful.
Absolutely. So then we move into July, and of course in July we have a season of Agatha Holmes, directed by David Massingham. Agatha Holmes was a great hit for us in 2009, and so it made sense to bring it back as a season. Now, I can't tell you about how the season's going to work, because obviously that's up to Dave, so possibly you'll be able to get Dave on in a future podcast to chat about the show.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm really looking forward to that one, because a great costume piece, and we've also got the Arts Theatre at that time, so we hope to be able to build a set to match that style, because one of the reasons Agatha Holmes worked so well first time around is because it just happened to go on in a set that was really appropriate and just really set it off, and we had beautiful costumes as well. So I look forward to that. That's of course Agatha Holmes is the Britain's greatest detective, as played by Gregory Robotham, who spends most of his time attempting to achieve intellectual
enlightenment
through a series of illegal or not so illegal
chemicals assistance.
Yes, thinking powder. Yeah. So that's going to be a lot of fun, and that's going to be a 6-show season. So in a similar way to Prog Death, we'll do a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and there will be season passes available to that.
Oh, great.
Following the Agatha Holmes season, the Brisbane Arts Theatre will have its drama festival, and then in the week following that, we'll actually have our own the Off the Cuff Festival 2010.
Are we doing a schools festival this year?
We are doing a schools festival that precedes the Off the Cuff Festival. They're in the same week, so so we have sort of 3 or 4 nights of a schools festival followed by 3 nights of our own festival, and that is to be directed by Wade Robinson and Alex Reichardt, so they will be organising the festival this year. So neat. I'm sure it'll be a great lineup of local and interstate, possibly even international talent. So that will be the end of July, and that's at the Brisbane Arts Theatre, so that'll really help secure our audiences there and give them lots of different things to look at.
That'll be really good, because people will have come to the same venue that we do our other shows in.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that we had a huge boost. In fact, I think we had a drop-off in the last festival. The last festival was incredible. 2 years ago, we had the Powerhouse.
Yes,
at the Powerhouse. Off the Cuff. And we were getting audiences of like 150 people a night. We had the Visy Theatre, and we had it like 2/3 full.
Yeah.
And it was just incredible to play in front of that size crowd. But there was very little move over from that crowd into ours. Although, among them, Miss Amy Curry, who's now an invaluable part of the company. So
there you go.
It was all worthwhile.
So, and this is the thing, you know, you never know who's going to get their interest piqued.
Mm.
And look, to be honest, we were able to get the Powerhouse because we got a grant for that festival.
Yes.
And the Powerhouse is obviously a gorgeous venue, a lovely venue.
Now we'll be bringing them to home base.
Yeah. And look, I think there's a lot to be said for that.
Yeah.
And it helps grow our base at the Arts Theatre. I've been doing a lot in my other role just with the Arts Theatre of trying to boost its profile in the community and show that we do actually have a lot more to offer as a theatre than just a bunch of shows that people aren't interested in. You know, we're doing shows like Falafel, and Greg's directing Catch 22, which you are in, I believe.
I am in
it. And Tom Dunstan is in.
Until he throws me out for having a terrible accent.
And Ash Hauenschild, who's an improviser.
He's in the scene.
He's in the group. I'm not sure if he's come back to improv. He started improv and has dropped away.
And he has his own podcast.
He does, yeah. Shout out to Ash if he's listening.
Over at
Get Us On.
Show business.
So, Ash, yeah, get us on. We'll talk stuff. So, yeah, so we'll have the festival. That's the end of July. Now, the first shows of the year I was able to schedule in. It's, you know, scheduling's a fairly...
Oh, and Gavcor.
Sorry, Gavcor. We forgot Gavcor. Gavcor is also in Catch 22. So, a bunch of improvisers in Catch 22. So, you'll all have to go and see that. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Doing scripted.
Maybe not fun is not the right word, but it's going to be a really good show.
Oh, it's going to be fun.
The first 4 shows of the year I was able to get into on the first Sunday of the month.
Yes.
If I followed that in the second half of the year, everyone would kill me with knives because of the way it's, you know, structured with the festival finishing and things like that.
Ah, yes.
So we kind of nudge things along a bit in the second half of the year, but still giving gaps enough for people to rehearse and to get over the previous show. Sunday the 21st of August is the next show, and I've dubbed it The Professor, but director Al Crawford may change this. This is essentially a science fiction Doctor Who parody inspired by type of show.
That should be interesting to see.
I know Greg Robotham has been very keen to do a show like this for many years, but it actually was Al who submitted the show idea. And look, I really like it. We have a hardcore geek audience. we have a hardcore geek player base, and I think people will really revel in being able to play with the conventions of time travel and space. And so it's not purely a Doctor Who parody, but I guess that might be its inspiration point, and it will jump off into other sci-fi, Star Trek, Stargate, and all sorts of things. So that's my phone in the background going off. I'm obviously receiving text messages, so I'll
hopefully,
get to that
shortly. Hopefully Al's show lives up to the great heights that my Doctor Who-themed impro show met.
What was that?
Occam's Beard.
Oh, right.
The radio play.
Ah,
back
I
in the hub
that.
In 1998.
Ah, yes. Look, this should be quite a fun show because we'll be able to access, you know, fun costumes and possibly some set pieces to do with it. But yeah, you'll have to ask Al for more details about that one and how he's going to run that. Following in September is a show directed by Amy Curry. Now, I've dubbed this Family Affairs, but again, I believe she might change this because when I asked people to submit titles, but obviously some of them were still in flux.
Yep.
You know, they had show ideas, but not necessarily names. So I've just dubbed it Family Affairs. Basically, it's a generational show, and it will follow a family through three different time periods. So the idea is to watch this family grow and watch as changes in the family happen and secrets are maybe revealed, things like that. So, again, following a big science fiction type show, we'll move into a interior drama almost.
Yeah.
So, again, rife for parody, rife for comedy. I mean, family, if nothing else, is a great source of humour.
It sounds similar in tone to The Wake.
Yeah, look, it definitely...
Depending on which direction she takes.
Yeah, it definitely has elements of that idea of exploring a family's past and things that they've done or could do. And so I felt that was a really interesting concept. And, you know, Amy's obviously a quite an intelligent player and a thoughtful player, and I think she'll bring a lot of, you know, head goodness, if that makes sense. You know,
head
a lot of
goodness.
Thought. Head goodness, sorry. I'm trying to express myself very badly. But a lot of thought and a lot of
Amy
depth.
Amy is known for her head goodness.
She's very, very...
Good in the head.
Good in the head gal. Sorry, Amy, if you're listening. I didn't mean that to sound insulting. Dan can cut this. I was essentially trying to compliment Amy and saying, look, she's a thoughtful, intelligent player and she'll bring a lot of that to this type of show. So I really look forward to seeing that. That'll be a good one. Sunday the 10th of October is Knights of the Round Table, directed by David Massingham.
Yeah.
And this is a great, big, fun show, I think this will be. This is Arthurian legends and lore, King Arthur, the Knights of the Round Table questing. And I imagine that the audience will have some sort of input onto what the knights will be questing for. So, again, the Brisbane Arts Theatre Costume Department has huge amounts of medieval type stuff.
Oh, I bet it does.
You know, this will be a great big costume show to put on and a lot of fun. So, again, getting that mix in there and just changing things up again. In November, we're doing something slightly different. We're actually going to do a season, but we're going to spread out a season spread out over 4 weeks, three or 4 weeks, I should say.
Yep.
Obviously, we had six show seasons in 2 weeks for Prognosis, Death and Agatha Holmes.
Yep.
And I wanted to balance it out with something at the end of the year that people could kind of get keen on and do some repeat business. And this is Gregory Robotham's show, Fists of Fury, which is a 1940s-style detective-slash-mystery-men-slash-superhero show.
Yep.
So the idea is not your Superman-type impervious to all pain superheroes, but the kind of dudes who'd pull on a mask and go and beat up some bad guys. So mystery men type action and, you know, bad guys, bit of story arc, maybe sidekicks, that sort of thing. So early era Batman, that kind of stuff. And it's a really, really interesting premise and certainly one that I think has legs for several shows in a row. So this will be one that people will be able to get keener back and come back for, you know, three or four Sundays in a row.
That will be fun to research too.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, again, another genre, you know, this whole genre of how people spoke back then and those American radio, based heavily on radio serials as well. And so I know Greg certainly took a lot of inspiration from the Tales from the Wireless show that was on in 2009, that idea of effects and things like that. So while this isn't a radio play, it's certainly taken elements of those serials from the late 30s and early 40s.
Yep.
About mystery men. So a lot of good fun, and that will be in Sundays through November. So
yes.
Good time of the year. People are finishing uni. They're finishing their sort of harder work for the year and they might be interested in relaxing once a week.
Yep.
And we'll have season passes and stuff available for that as well.
Right.
differently priced, obviously, but determining on how we get there. And finally, our final show of the year is on Sunday, the 12th of December. And at the moment, this is a Charles Dickens by the book. It was really something I had in mind, which was to top and tail the year with a by the book. I think it's a strong format. I'm biased, obviously. But I also, the Arts Theatre is also doing a Christmas Carol. Yep. Charles Dickens is a Christmas Carol.
So we'll have that sort of Dickensian
show.
Light.
So a Dickensian what? Show.
What is it? When's it set?
Well, the late 1860s, 1870s, it's sort of Dickens.
So snow on the streets and sort of little street lamps.
And think the Doctor Who Christmas special with David, what's his face? The one with the giant Cyberman. Leave out the giant Cyberman.
Oh, right, yes.
But, yeah. But also the one, also the Doctor Who with Charles Dickens even. Yeah. Good work, because that had
who?
Snow. basically, I think that after we did a Jane Austen by the book, and this is before I even knew that Charles Dickens, that a Christmas Carol was going on at the Arts Theatre, but I thought that the next author that sprang to my mind that would be ripe for a by the book parody would be Charles Dickens. And I think even if you don't know Charles Dickens' stories intimately,
there's so many
you're
tropes.
Aware of them. And there's so many
the
parodies like
who...
The Muppets' Christmas Carol, A Blackadder's Christmas Carol, Oliver Twist, Oliver the Musical.
Mm-hmm.
There's been so many versions of his stories told in different ways. I think Jim Carrey was just in a Scrooge story.
Mm-hmm.
There's been so many. And the aim
Don't
is to
Bill
not...
Murray.
Exactly. The aim is to not do a Christmas Carol again. Not that I have a problem with that, because I think it's a lovely tale that's ripe for improv parody. But
well,
so,
that's an interesting phrase you've used there, because it would be a parody. It would be taking a story and then picking the elements of the story and parodying.
Adding in audience feedback as to what, you know, why a character is acting the way they are.
Which
having
is
said
kind
that,
of a different way of doing a long form, and it's kind of what the Pride and Prejudice show was, the Jane Austen show, because there was a sense of parody in a couple of those scenes, isn't there?
Yeah.
And it would be an interesting direction to spin off in.
And this is the thing, I mean...
it's always a balance between shows that are really chaotic and in the moment and shows that are built on a really strong skeleton that have playfulness within it, within the structure.
That's right. And I think that, again, it's a chance to extend our literary... skills, it's a chance to look at genre, it's a chance to do a costume show, and it's a chance to do quite a sweet Christmas show. Obviously, it's coming up towards Christmas, and it's a nice way of kind of paying tribute to everyone who's worked for the company in the year and who supported the show by giving them a kind of a heartwarming story, really.
Mm.
It doesn't have to be all funny all the time. It could be quite bittersweet, you know. It's
so
to say.
You better work hard so that we thank you properly with a good show at the end of the year, everyone.
I think that Charles Dickens essentially is always looking about, if you look at Jane Austen as being about women achieving social status through marriage and security that way, that's a very general term. Charles Dickens is about poor, unfortunate, generally boys, being raised up into the higher ranks of society. Generally they're orphans, generally they come from poor backgrounds or poor families, and through twists of fate find out that they're actually heirs to fortunes, or they have wealthy benefactors. And there's a lot of playing about with that idea of sudden wealth and the industrialized Britain and how that changes, and the repression of Victorian society. And not, I'm obviously getting too far into it, but there are so many wonderful...
I'm scared. I don't want to be in this show.
No, there are just so many wonderful things there that without even thinking, you know, without even thinking too much about it, you're just sort of aware of a Dickensian London, Dickensian characters, grizzled street pickpockets and lofty lords of the manor. And, you know, little orphan boys going, please, sir, I want some more. You know, there are so many, as you say, tropes and characters that are just going to be wonderful for people to play. And so that's why I really wanted to end the year with that. So that's the season as it stands. And obviously disasters could happen. Fingers crossed, touch wood. But that's sort of the ideas. And look, I got so many great suggestions.
So nice to have all this thought out in advance. Like, I think the first year at the Brisbane Arts Theatre, we didn't know what we were doing 3 months
ago. Yeah,
in advance,
look, it went month to month.
I hope I'm right with that, or else Wade's going to get all grumpy.
No. It was very much a learning ground, and we worked out sort of from month to month or a couple of months ahead. Wade would you know, theme a show. And then very much in 2009, he had a much more ordered schedule, which is what I've wanted to sort of emulate and be able to give directors time to rehearse. And you know, they've got deadlines for when their shows are coming up, and so there hopefully won't be any surprises. And I will be able to, as AD, help them and facilitate their shows in absolutely the best way possible. So show directors have a lot of responsibility, but they're all people who submitted ideas. They submitted great ideas. They showed enthusiasm. And I'm so happy that people are keen to work with Impro Mafia and bring their ideas to us. So... thank you everyone for submitting. I had so many good ideas, more than I could fit in, which was sad, but otherwise we're just becoming too crowded and we end up losing people due to stress. Because when you factor in the speakeasy and you factor in Albion and things like that, you know, we've got, and you factor in people's lives and, for example, Dave, Mike, Luke, Amy, all those guys are involved in The Sexy Detective, so a big chunk of their year will go on to that. You know, you've got to take into account other people's projects and other people's desires.
Like in directing shows at the Arts Theatre.
Yeah, we're doing some directing in the first half of the year, so
I'm doing a webcomic at www.invisiblespiders.com.
Yeah.
Feel free to give feedback on that as well.
Yeah, do. Douchebag.
Son of a bitch.
Tool.
You know, I've been sitting... Nat is halfway through getting her hair ready to go out.
Don't tell... I call you a tool, and now you're going to tell everyone how my hair's up in clips.
For an hour, I've been sitting here racking my brains trying to figure out who she reminds me of. I finally got it.
No?
Ace Ventura.
Ace Ventura. Alrighty then. Okay now, bye-bye then. Assalamia! I love that.
And time! You have been listening to Natalie Vahitsky. You can check out her personal blog at www.girlclumsy.com. I'm Dan Beeston. You can check out my webcomic at invisiblespiders.com.
Douchebag.com.
For information about Impro in Brisbane,
whoops,
check out impromafia.com. Thanks to David Peachy for our theme music. Hosting for End Time is... proudly brought to you by CivicNet Web Design.
Oh, I heard a good joke.
Go on then.
It's a Jimmy Carr joke. I got to credit it. But it's I ran over a kid holding a cymbal. Ba-boom, ching. I ran over a kid holding a cymbal.
Why is there a second boom?
Ba-boom. So he ran over the car.
Okay,
ba-boom,
cool.
Ching. Yeah, Jimmy Carr does it better than me, so I apologize. Can we start the season launch all over again? Welcome to people who just fast-forwarded.
Do you want to have a crack at the punchline again?
No. I think it's best to leave the scene of that accident and to not report it to police and just to move on with our lives. That would be wise. I should learn. How many times did I try telling jokes at the speakeasy last year? And they just went down like a lead balloon. This is my feeling why I should never do stand-up comedy. Because
I love them.
I feel that I would be not booed off stage, just everyone would sit there looking really, really sorry for me and sort of sitting there going, wow, it's just embarrassing.
How did your first 5-minute set go, Nat? I got a hug.
Yeah. Somebody bought me a drink. It was fizzing.
Someone gave me $50.
Yeah.
It was to get off the stage.
And $50 and a card for a psychologist. And I think I'll use both of those.
That was Natalie's body making that sound.
It was my mouth. My body doesn't make sounds. It's too polite.